begin at the top of Daf Yud Amud Beis. It's neat, you don't have to look for it. Beginning of Daf Yud Amud Beis. No lines down. So, we ended last time, we're still in the middle of the story of Chizkiyahu. We mentioned that Chizkiyahu said he has a tradition from his family that even if a sharpened sword is lying on somebody's neck, he should not refrain, shouldn't hold back from davening for help. And therefore, even though he was informed by the Navi that there was a decree that he should be killed, that he should die, Chas v'Shalom, he told Yeshaya, I hear the prophecy, your eitzes I don't need, I have my own approach to it, I am going to daven to have the decree revoked. I'll just note something. Chizkiyahu said, I am going to daven to revoke the decree, because I know that even if a sharp sword is on somebody's neck, you shouldn't hold back. Is that a proof that you can daven to revoke a decree?
Well, you'll know the
answer. Huh? Sharp sword on somebody's neck doesn't indicate a divine decree. Who said you can revoke a divine decree by davening? Sharp sword? Yes. A divine decree?
Who was it?
That's another question. We'll see. Well, that would have been Yeshaya's ancestor too. We say Chizkiyahu is saying he has a Kabbalah from his ancestors. We'll see. What? In the case of a sword. No, in this case, Chizkiyahu is told by Yeshaya a prophecy that there's a decree. So how's he proving from a guy with a sharp sword? Yeah, with a sharp sword, or as Bitochen, doesn't see it as such a major threat. You're told that there's a decree from Hashem. That's a lot more of a threat than a sharp sword sitting on your throat. So, the truth is, the Mepharshim say that no. A decree from Hashem is also, that's exactly the point that the Gemara is making. A decree from Hashem is not conclusive. A decree from Hashem is also subject to change by a person changing his actions. A decree from Hashem is in place according to current reality. Often, this is a very important principle that many of the Rishonim say, don't think that through...
I'm not hearing a Jewish, it's Akasha. Akasha's raised and the response is, not up here.
Oh, no, so we'll explain. The Rishonim say that don't think that you can change Hashem's mind. Some of them are Rishonim presented this way. When you daven to change a situation, the situation changes. Don't think that you can change Hashem's mind. Don't think that you can change Hashem's mind through changing your ways. You don't change Hashem's mind. What's happening is, in a case of tefillah, or in case of a person who improves his ways, what's happening is something different. The decree was that this person, in this current state of spirituality, with this fault and that fault, should suffer XYZ. But when the person changes those faults, the decree automatically falls away. The decree was never leveled at such a situation in the first place. What's that? Even if it was publicized, a decree for bad is the same thing. You're asking about the Gemara that says once a decree is publicized, it doesn't change so fast. Even that can be changed. Just it's not as easy. But the point is that when a decree is leveled, it is not leveled often. Sometimes it is. But often it's not leveled in an absolute way. It's leveled at a very specific reality. Let's say, for example, you have a person who's in charge of a show, a concert. And he comes and he looks at the hall and he says, well, the lighting has to be set up in such and such a way. Okay, fine. Then in the interim, somebody comes and widens the windows of the hall. Okay? He comes back and he says, well, then the lighting that I ordered doesn't apply. The lighting should now be changed to this sort of lighting. They say, 1 minute, what's with the big expert? He can't figure it out? And the answer is, of course, this lighting was ordered for a hall that has smaller windows. For a hall that has larger windows, obviously that lighting doesn't apply. Different lighting applies. So too, when the decree of Hashem is leveled, it's leveled at a person, not just at the person. It's leveled at the person in this current state. That's what the decree is leveled at. When a person changes that state, it's not that now Hashem changed his mind. It's that the decree becomes irrelevant because that person is no longer here. He's already in a different state. All the lighting changes. All the effects change. So therefore, yes, changing one's ways can change it. And also tefillah can change it. Yes, according to this, tefillah, you're not changing your ways. You're still the same guy. It's not true. By tefillah, a person draws closer to Hashem. If the whole purpose of the decree is, this person has been ignoring Hashem a little too much lately, if the decree wakes the person up and brings him back closer to Hashem, once again, the decree falls away. So the truth is that no, we should not view a decree differently than other threats. Decrees also can be revoked through changing the situation. And therefore, Chizkiyahu is saying, yes, it was a decree given by a prophet, but yet, there's still room to fight it. Okay. Oh, now you asked. Chizkiyahu said that he had a tradition from his ancestors, right? That even if there's a sharp sword on somebody's neck, you can change it through tefillah. What exactly was he referring to? Apparently he had some tradition that Yeshaya didn't have. What exactly was he referring to? So Rashi says he was referring to David. David saw, at one point had a vision of an angel standing on Har HaBayis with a drawn sword, which meant that the angel was already dispatched to cause destruction. That was the situation of a sword on somebody's neck, because that means that the angel had already been dispatched. It's conclusive. Yet, David davened to have the decree revoked. So there you mamish see, mamish this instance. There was a case of a drawn sword, not of a human being, of a sword that Hashem had drawn in order to wreak destruction. And yet, David showed that it can be revoked. Oh, so the question is, this is really the question. Certainly, Kal Yisrael are very familiar with the concept of davening. That's not the chiddush here. The chiddush here is basically the point that we've been discussing. A decree has been issued.
Governor Melech, same thing.
Right, Governor Melech. That was what Chizkiyahu was referring to. You're asking, why didn't Yishayahu know about the story of David? I don't know. Was it publicized already at that point? Sefer Shmuel was written. The truth is that Chizkiyahu was involved in the publication of a lot of the Kisvei HaKodesh. I'm not sure exactly what was known at which point. I don't know.
Okay.
That is the concept of changing the name. That's a little bit more of a gimmick, if we'll call it that. But Chazal grant that legitimacy too. We'll say that the essential way of making changes, although it's sometimes more difficult, is changing one's actions. But yes, Chazal say that changing the name or changing a person's place can also have this effect. Okay. Now we'll see this put into another light. Omar Rabbi Chana, right at the beginning of Yudam and Beis. Omar Rabbi Chana. Even if a dreamer, soothsayer, tells a person that Lemachar who mates is going to die tomorrow, Al Yimna Atzmoy Min Arachamim, do not hold back from davening. Shenema, because it says in the pasuk, yes, there's an excess of dreams and all kinds of nonsense and all kinds of talk. The bottom line is fear Hashem. Now this is interesting. The Gemara was talking before about a sword on somebody's throat. It was talking before about a decree issued by a Navi. Now the Gemara says, you know what? This even applies to a soothsayer. Anybody who's had a sword on his throat will tell you that that seems a lot more imminently dangerous than a soothsayer. There are plenty of them around today too. We don't take them very seriously. So what exactly is the Gemara coming to add? You should know, yes, not only a prophecy, not only a sword, but even a soothsayer. Marsha says something fascinating. He says the exact opposite. On the contrary, the pasuk that the Gemara cites shows that usually soothsayers shouldn't be taken seriously. How does the pasuk put it? There's all kinds of dreams and nonsense and a lot of babble. That's basically what the pasuk is saying. Just fear Hashem. So the pasuk seems to be indicating that soothsayers shouldn't be taken seriously. What's the big chiddush here? The Maharsha says the pasuk, the Gemara is saying exactly the opposite, the other side of the coin of what we said previously, and this is profound. Soothsayers, it's generally nonsense, and yet the Gemara is stressing, not only in a position where you're facing real danger should you take it as a sign to daven, but even when you're told something that in all likelihood is nonsense, but there is that small possibility that it's real. So if you're just going with statistics, you can dismiss it. But we don't go by statistics. We view everything as hashgach. If so, Hashem is sending you a message that there's a 5% chance that you're in trouble. And that's a little bit disturbing, but with statistics you can ignore it. The Gemara is telling you here that you should have very refined sensitivities to Hashem's messages. If Hashem sends even a small danger your way, you should take that as a wake-up call. Even though you could logically simply dismiss it, the Gemara is saying no. Even that, take seriously and step up your tefillos. It's a very interesting point. It's a very profound point. This gives a whole different look on the concept of dangers. And this is how a real ma'amin views dangers. If you view dangers as, first, well, what are the statistics? If the chances are against me, I bet a daven. So then in the case of the soothsayer, you can just ignore it. But if you view the whole concept from the opposite angle and you say, everything is a message from Hashem, if chas v'shalom, a person is told, he's given a prognosis, 95% chas v'shalom, and 5% that he's going to heal, he takes that as a big wake-up call. If that's how you're viewing it, then when you get a prognosis that is only 3% negative, 97% that it'll be okay, don't say that that's nothing. Take that as a softer wake-up call. But that's also a wake-up call. Yes, any small message. No message is too small to be ignored. Just like no message is too big to despair. No matter how big the message is, don't despair, David. So too, no message is too small to be taken seriously. Okay. We move on. Miyad. What's the continuation of the story? Yishayahu left. And he issued his prophecy and he left. Hizkiyahu has been told that he has a death sentence hanging over his head. Miyad, immediately, he's on the base, the fourth line. Vayasev Chizkiyahu panav el hakir. Chizkiyahu turned his face to the wall. Vayispalel el Hashem. And he davened to Hashem. My kir. What is the significance of the wall? It seems that he made the wall a big part of his davening. And you might remember that earlier in the Masechta we actually derived halacha from this, you remember. That a person should daven directly facing the wall. But now the Gemara is going to learn other things from this. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Mekiroi Sliba, he davened to Hashem from the walls of his heart. What are the walls of his heart? Meaning from the innermost depths. His tefillah filled his entire heart. It was all he was conscious of. There was nothing else in his heart. It was from wall to wall. It was the only thing he was focused on. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, may I oichila. I hope to Hashem with all of my innards. Kiroi slibi, with all the walls of my heart. Meaning the tefillah is filling my heart from wall to wall. Rabbi Levi Omar, Rabbi Levi says that the wall signifies something else. al iskei hakir. He was using a wall to negotiate, so to speak, with Hashem. Omar lefanu. He said to Hashem, Rebbeinu Shalom, Oma shunamis. If this shunamis, who was the shunamis? Shunamis was a woman who hosted Elisha Anovi. A woman from Shunem, called the shunamis. He used to circle all around Eretz Yisrael, and she regularly hosted him when he passed in her area. All she did was make one wall in honor of Elisha. They had a wall put up. We'll see soon in the Gemara. He's following the opinion that, what's that? She put him up in the attic, and she actually renovated somewhat. She made a sheetrock wall up there or something like that to make it more comfortable for him. As we'll see soon. Hechayesus b'na. That merit was so strong that you brought her son back to life after he had died. You know the story? She miraculously had a child after many years of being childless. After she hosted Elisha, Elisha asked her, is there anything I can do for you? And the only thing she wanted was a child. And when the child was a boy, he died. She came to Elisha and she said, I never asked for a child, you offered it. Don't offer me these things and take them away. So he brought the child back to life. That was the way Elisha operated. Okay? So, if making one little wall up in an attic can provide such a merit, Avi Abba, my grandfather, Shlomo HaMelech, Shechipa Esayichol Kulay Bekesav L'Mizav, who not only built the Beis HaMikdash, but he plated the entire interior with silver and gold, doesn't that earn him at least the same merit as the Shunamis? Alachas Kama V'Kama. Well, certainly you should grant life to his descendant, me. So that's the beginning of his tefillah. Then he continues and he says, Zecharna, please remember, please remember how I always went before you truthfully and wholeheartedly, and I did what was right in your eyes. Now, what is he referring to when he invokes the special merit of doing what was right in Hashem's eyes? Omar Av Yehuda Omar Av. Yes, he had special merits. What were his special merits? Shesamach Geula Litfila. That he would daven Shemana Esrei immediately after Gal Yisrael. Right, remember? We've seen already twice throughout the Masechta that's very meritorious. We had so Tosis's addition to that it means davening Vasikin. So that was the merit that he was invoking. Chizkiyahu davened Vasikin every day and immediately followed Gal Yisrael to Shemana Esrei. Rabbi Levi Omar, Rabbi Levi said, Shegonaz Sefer Refuos, that he buried away the book of remedies. We're going to see soon that Chizkiyahu took a very bold step. In his day, there was a book that contained remedies for everything. And Chizkiyahu got rid of that book. Why? We'll discuss that soon in the Gemara. Whatever it is, this was the schus that he was now invoking. Okay, so we're seeing two approaches as to what exactly the schus was. So first let's just understand why he's invoking these schusim here. Chizkiyahu, we must understand, had plenty of schusim. Chizkiyahu was the man who brought Klal Yisrael an unprecedented level of dedication to Torah study. I don't know if unprecedented, but to a very, very great level of Torah study. So why is he drawing on these merits per se? So, apparently his argument is Oh, you're saying that Tzal Kal V'Chomer in a complete sense, meaning the equation makes sense because she made a little wall that suffices for her child. Shlomo HaMelech did so much more, it should extend a little further down. Apparently that's the equation. But you're saying Dayon. In the halachas of Kal V'Chomer, this doesn't go. That's what you're asking. You're right. What? Oh, okay. You're asking a double question here. Shlomo HaMelech, Chizkiyahu comes and shows Hashem why logically he should be saved. He has a Kal V'Chomer, right? So first of all, couldn't Hashem figure Kal V'Chomer out by himself? And second of all, the truth is that if Jonathan is right, this Kal V'Chomer does not hold halachically. This is not a valid Kal V'Chomer al pi halacha, because you can never, even if a Kal V'Chomer is more powerful, when you're basing a more powerful premise on a weaker premise, you can never take the result of the Kal V'Chomer further than the basis of the Kal V'Chomer. If the basis of the Kal V'Chomer is a case where she earns merit for her son, how can you take this to a great or great-great-grandchild? But the truth is that the answer to both questions is really one and the same. Everybody heard of Reb Levi Yitzchak of Bardichev. Now he was famous. What was he famous as? Everyone called him the Sanegor of Klal Yisrael, the advocate of Klal Yisrael. Why, what did he do? Whenever he saw Jews, he would make a point of pointing out their virtue. Construing anything he saw about Jews in some virtuous way. To the extent that he was one time walking with his Talmidim and they saw a wagon driver who was busy fixing his wagon while he davened Mincha. Davening Mincha and fixing his wagon. The Talmidim looked at him in disgust. And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Baditchev turned his eyes up to Shemayim and he said, "Ribbono Shel Olam, look at your nation. Even while they're busy fixing their wagons, they daven." I actually heard a current day Darshan say, what would Rabbi Levi Yitzchak say if he walked into a modern day shul and saw people on the phone? What would he say about that? He said, I think the only thing you'd be able to say is, wow, look at your nation, Klal Yisrael. Even their central bus stations look like shuls. Okay, but whatever it is, what was Rabbi Levi Yitzchak's big point? He spent his life doing this. He made this a career. I'll just tell one other incident once we're on the subject. One time on Leil Pesach, before he started the Seder, he had a lot of Talmidim there. He couldn't start. Wait, before we start. What? He said, I need a few things before I can start. I need a pile of Turkish shawls before I could start. What was the idea of Turkish shawls? When they lived in Russia, Russia was at war with Turkey, and it was very severely prohibited to import Turkish products. Yet, smuggling industry abounded, as always. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak instructed the Talmidim, I have to have a pile of Turkish shawls before I can start the Seder. Now, any true chassid knows that when the Rebbe wants something, the chassidim get it. So they set out, the imams combed the area, yes, they came back with a pile of Turkish shawls for Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. Okay? Then Rabbi Levi Yitzchak said, I need one more thing, before I could start the Seder. I need, from within the community, a slice of bread. Okay? Well, the Hasidim, the Rebbe said the Hasidim were determined to get it. But they combed the entire Jewish community, and came back to the Rebbe empty-handed. There was no slice of bread to be had. So Rabbi Yitzchak said, "Ribbono Shel Olam, look at your nation, Klal Yisrael. Here, owning Turkish shawls can land a person in jail for life or worse. And yet, you can get a hold of them. Chametz is just your word. Can't get a slice of bread in town." What was his purpose in doing that? Hashem can figure that out also. And the answer is, and this is fundamental, and this is really the answer to your question too. We have to understand what the power of our speech is. Often, yes, there are different merits that can be invoked. People can be deserving of things. But yet, you need someone to come ahead and articulate it in this world in order to turn it into a reality. We pull the strings in the upper world in a much bigger way than we can realize. Therefore, it's so chashiv whenever you can to say positive things about Klal Yisrael. The Barachecha Baruch, you're blessed if you can bless Klal Yisrael. Therefore, you also have to be so careful not to say negative things about Klal Yisrael. Because by saying negative things about Klal Yisrael, you can cause the forces higher up to cooperate. So you have to be very, very careful. That's, by the way, everybody knows. It's a favorite. You're allowed to say Lashon Hara if you don't say the name. Right? You're allowed to say Lashon Hara if you don't say the name. Halachically, that's true. A person can't figure out who you're talking about, you're allowed to say Lashon Hara. But we have to realize, Chafetz Chaim points this out, that there's another issue. Talking negatively about Klal Yisrael can cause these things to be corroborated higher up. And therefore, always avoid it. Always avoid it. No, in Indian. In Indian. But it's an Indian that has halachic manifestations. For example, the Chinuch says, this is the pshat in the Isra to curse a Jew. Because speech has an effect. Now the Chachamim took this much further, took it to much more subtle elements. They said, for example, they went so far as to say they wouldn't want to report a death. Why? We don't want to articulate something negative. That makes it realer. What do you mean it's realer? The guy's dead. No, it can enhance the effect in the upper worlds, which could somehow cause even more ruination in this world. And therefore, they would try to hint it in different ways. Never wanted to articulate anything negative. And it's true in the positive sense also. Often, you can say things that can have big effects. Often, HaKadosh Baruch Hu might hold off with different things until some human comes along, articulates it, and then opens the channels of bracha into this world. So on the contrary, the truth is, Chizkiyahu was using a Kal V'Chaimer that wasn't really halachically sound. But yet, he was using an argument to invoke some schus, and thereby, he created schus. He created schus. Yes. Was it schus? Maybe could have been beforehand. But, Chizkiyahu actually created it through articulating it. It's something we should keep in mind. Because it's something that we can exercise in all kinds of ways all over the place. Okay. Now, Chizkiyahu invokes, depending on the different opinions, one of two schusim. Either the schus of Smichas Geula Letfila, of God you saw right before Shemana Esrei, or the schus of hiding away the Book of Remedies. So, let's just understand why he's picking on these schusim per se. So, here the Mefarshim explain this on two levels. First of all, what did we learn? What's the concept of Smichas Geula Letfila? The concept is that when a person relives Yetzias Mitzrayim in a vivid way, he approaches his tefila with the full confidence that there's nothing to it that my tefila should be answered. If I'm davening to the one who right now in my mind's eye, I see him splitting the sea, then there's no reason, there's nothing holding my tefila back from being answered. It strengthens a person's bitachin, his confidence in his approach to his tefillah. So Chizkiyahu is saying, I exercise this. And therefore, this bitachin is a very, very great schus. When a person asks for things with the full confidence that Hashem can and would provide it, Hashem is much more likely to. When your tefillah actually manifests full faith in it. So Chizkiyahu is telling Hashem, when I'm davening for a recovery in a hopeless situation, I'm not davening in a desperate way. I'm davening with the approach of Smichas Geula Letfila. In my mind, I see all the nisim of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Healing me is really not such a big deal. I don't see it as far-fetched at all. That itself is reason for it to happen. The more a person feels like the answer to his feel is close on hand, the more likely it is to be. So that's what he's saying by invoking his chus of being Samech Geula Letfila. Now, there's another thing that really is beyond our scope, but of a more Kabbalistic approach to what was going on here, but I'm going to mention it anyway since I saw it repeated already. Sometimes you see it, so you think it's a vart of one of the Mefarshim. When you see it, by different mefarshim across the full cultural scale, you see that no, it's something more inherent. So this is something that, from the Middle East all the way to Eastern Europe, the authorities understood this pshat. This is the Pnei Yeshua, and the Chidah, and the Ben Ishchai, and the Vilna Goin, all say. So we covered all cultures. That actually, what was the complaint against Yechizkiel? They hadn't performed the mitzvah of Pur Urvu. What does Pur Urvu represent? What does the mitzvah of marital relations represent? Marital relations represents the unification of what's inherently one. Man and his wife are inherently one, and by getting together, they actually unify. Now that really is representative of what all of our service of Hashem is about. Our service of Hashem is, there's the level of Hashem's revelation in this world that is in the mud. That's Hashem's glory is being downtrodden. Now that's only the level of Hashem's revelation in this world. Up in the higher world, Hashem's glory is as it always was. Our point is to create achdus, to create uniformity, to create a situation where Hashem's revelation, from the top, from the highest levels down to the bottommost levels in this world, is all uniformly glorious. And that's what we call, anybody who says L'Shem Yichud, I don't know if anybody here actually says that, by the Chassidim, it's popular, L'Shem Yichud Kud Shabrichu Ushchinte. All mitzvahs, right? It's something that the Chassidim, the Sfaradim say, all mitzvahs. L'Shem Yichud, they preface it by saying, L'Shem Yichud Kud Shabrichu Ushchinte. We want to unify the Shechina, which is Hashem's revelation in this world, with its higher places. And it's Baruch himself, give a Yachud. That's what all of our mitzvahs are aimed at. And that is embodied in the mitzvah of marital relations. That's where we actually do that in a physical way. So now, Geula, the Brach of Gal Yisrael, its relationship to Tefillah is mamish the same as the male's relationship to the female in the upper spheres. When you affix Geula to Tefillah, it's the same spiritual effect as the spiritual effect caused by male joining with female. And therefore, Chizkiyahu was saying, I did do it. I did it. I just did it in a different way. I did it on a more spiritual plane. Now the truth is, Yeshayahu's message was, that's not enough. You got to do it in the way the Torah expects, all the way down to the most physical levels. But yet, Chizkiyahu was saying, at the same time, I did have that effect. Okay, this is certainly beyond our normal scope, but I was meant something to me, the fact that so many of these different mepharshim from these different places say it, that I thought I'd convey it. Okay. Now, the other pshat is that no, he was invoking the merit of hiding away the Book of Remedies. Now we're going to see soon that that was a very controversial step, as we can imagine. There's a book. Every disease, you look up in the index, and you have the solution. By hiding that away, he jeopardized countless lives. We'll discuss soon exactly what his considerations were. What's that? You see that he didn't? You see that he didn't? So let's see. He's telling Hashem something else. His purpose in hiding the book away, as we'll see soon, was because he wanted people to focus their attention, focus their attempts to get better on Hashem, not to just resort to the book as an easy escape. And we'll discuss that when we get to it. It's coming up. Okay. We're going to save that for when we get to it in the sugya. Good. But, what's that? They said, didn't the book come from Hashem too? Okay, we'll get there. We're not really in the sugya yet. What's that? Actually, since it's the Koach Nefesh. Yechizkiyahu endangered countless lives by doing this. Why did he do it? Because he said no. The consideration of making people more aware of the need to daven overrides. Surprising. And we're not addressing it yet. We're going to get to it soon. But whatever it is, this was obviously a very delicate call, which he had the confidence to make. Now, when he himself took sick, Hashem Lamaisa agreed with his cause. We'll see soon. When he himself took sick, Chizkiyahu was telling Hashem, look, I'm going to die now. People are going to say, he proved his error. Right? He proved his error. And therefore, people are going to say there was the wrong call, while Lamaisa, that was what you wanted to happen. I have to be a lesson of the truth of this idea. People should learn from me that you don't need the Book of Remedies, because you can be healed by davening to Hashem. So therefore, this is the most direct merit to invoke. Right? I'm the one who hid away the Book of Remedies. I should be the first one to be healed without the Book of Remedies, by davening to you. This is what he was saying to Hashem. So the Chofetz Chaim did the same thing. Chofetz Chaim wrote his sefer Chofetz Chaim about Shmiras HaLashon. What does the name indicate? That Shmiras HaLashon earns you length of days. Based on the pasuk, Mi Yishe Chofetz Chaim, Oiv Yom Tzul Yistoy. That was the Chofetz Chaim's big selling point. He calls the name of his sefer. He's the one making a Shmiras HaLashon revolution. And he calls the name of his sefer Chofetz Chaim, he who desires life. Now Chofetz Chaim lived till 93, which nowadays is considered a nice long life. In those days, what's that? 94 and a half. Oh, so we added a year and a half. I didn't know that. In those days, life expectancy was much less. You're talking back in Europe about 100 years ago, 80 years ago. People lived till the mid-60s, generally. So the Chofetz Chaim, when he hit 80, which David HaMelech deems as an especially strong person, Bigvuah Shmanim Shana, David HaMelech says, days of life expectancy is 70 years. If a person is extremely powerful, he goes to 80. So when the Chofetz Chaim hit 80, he publicized it in the local Frum newspapers. Because he felt that he wants people to see that, yes, the one who spread the concept of Shmiras HaLashon claiming that it earns you a lengthy life did live long. So he was already impressed when he hit 80. He went another 14 years after that. I guess he didn't know that at the time. Maybe he did it again when he hit 90. I don't know. Okay. Fine. Now this whole story of the hiding away the Book of Remedies that we'll see, we have it coming up in the Gemara. Coming up right now. Tanu Rabban. The writer that says as follows. Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech did six things. Meaning six things in which he made a tough call. Al Shleisha Haiduloi. Three of them the Chachamim agreed with. They approved. Val Shleisha Loi Haiduloi. Three things they did not approve of. Number one was Gonaz Sefer Refuos, what we've been discussing. He hid away the Book of Remedies, the Haiduloi, and the Chachamim approved of what he did. Okay, so I avoided the issue up till now, but now we're actually hitting the issue. So what's going on here? So we already explained what Chizkiyahu's cheshbon was. People had too easy a way out. Person got sick, indexed it in the Book of Remedies, and that was that. He was healed. And Chizkiyahu said, people are missing the point. People are not directing their tefillahs to Hashem. People are not realizing that sickness requires you to daven to Hashem. That's taking the easy escape. Forget about it. Let's get rid of the Sefer Refuos. That's obviously a very drastic call.
What was the point having it to begin with?
Hashem having
money for us to have it to begin
with? Oh, so George asked before, well, didn't Hashem provide the Sefer Refuos? And you're asking, what was the point of it? Okay, so the Rambam answers this question. Meaning, Rashi Sorry, not Rashi. But the Ramban and others say that yes, this was a sefer that was authored by Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech knew everything. And he authored this sefer which showed the remedy for any sickness. Now, the Ramban has a long exposition in which he says that in earlier times, says it's a chiddush. The Torah says a chiddush that a doctor is a legitimate profession. It's a chiddush in the Torah, because we would have thought otherwise. That a doctor is a legitimate profession. Now the Ramban says that you have to realize that that is a chiddush, because essentially there should not be doctors in Klal Yisrael. This is a very amazing thing. The Ramban says the way of dealing with sickness is not by going to a doctor. Sickness is a message from Hashem that there's something to improve, and the way to deal with it is by improving. You made an appointment with the Navi, he told you where you went wrong recently, what it is you need to work on, and that was that. And he says, Malu Roife, the base of the Hashem, I forgot exactly his lashon, but something to that effect. What does a loyal servant of Hashem have to do in a doctor's office? So he says, therefore, for example, says that Asa, King Asa, says that Hashem was critical of him because when he got sick, he didn't turn to Hashem and he turned to the doctors. The Ramban says this implies that there were two things he did wrong. Not turning to Hashem was one mistake, but besides that, even if he would have turned to Hashem, turning to the doctors was another mistake. Who needs doctors? And therefore, that was what Chizkiyahu was doing. He said, forget the doctors. Turn to Hashem, and that's that. Any sickness is a sign that Hashem wants you to improve. That's what you do. Okay. Now, the Rambam, he says that no, this Sefer of Fuas means something else. Means, people had put together a book of all kinds of talismanic healings, which were based on fortune telling, and which are not really approved by the Torah. There was such a book in existence, which you weren't allowed to use al pi halacha, and he therefore stored it away. Now the Ramban,
why store it away? Burn it.
Yeah, maybe that's like really what gonads means. Gonads means that he got rid of it. That's really what it means, practically. No, not necessarily. He got rid of it. Now the Rambam says, I heard people saying this ridiculous pshat, Rambam says. That no, it was actually a real book of remedies that Shlomo HaMelech wrote, the Rambam says, and that he stored away so people should daven to Hashem. So the Rambam says, that's why I felt it was very important to explain my other explanation, because this is completely ridiculous. But you're not supposed to go to doctors, you're supposed to just supposed to daven to Hashem. That's the only way to deal with any ailment. The Rambam says, there's another ailment called hunger. Right? Very epidemic that basically all humans suffer from, unless you take medicine regularly. And there's a medicine which in medical terms is called food. Okay? That people resort to. We have to confess, many people resort to this remedy. They go to a doctor, also medical terms is called a grocer, and they buy food. He says, what's going on? Food! For a person who serves Hashem, you daven, and that's how you deal with your hunger. So the Rambam says, ridiculous. Says the same what we say about what's the answer with regard to food. Why do you take food? Why don't you just daven to Hashem? He says, because the idea is, yes, when you're hungry, you take food and you thank Hashem for providing you with the food. He says it's exactly the same thing with medicine. When you're sick, you take the medicine that Hashem provided with and you say thank you to Hashem for providing the medicine. So what kind of nonsense is this? Of course you use doctors. What's the Ramban going to say to that? What's that? That's what the Rambam is saying. What's the difference?
That people have to be, it's not an ailment, it's the nature of things.
Oh, yeah?
This is a disorder.
Oh, so says the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish writes, He brings this machloikis between the Ramban and the Rambam, and he says, this ridiculous pshat that the Rambam discarded, he says, was a Kabbalah. That's what the Chazon Ish says. He says it was a Kabbalah, it was a tradition that was handed down by Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes, there was this, this was the true tradition. But that's what this Sefer was. And the Chazon Ish says, the Rambam's argument is not an argument. There's a big difference between food and medicines. Food, the world is meant to inevitably run that way. That is inherently what a human being is. He eats every so often in order to sustain himself. Sickness is not an absolutely inherent part of human existence. And on the contrary, with regard to sickness, we go back to what the Ramban says. It's certainly unusual for a person never to get sick in his life. But if, let's say you go by a week without getting sick, is that miraculous? No. How about a month? Also not. 3 months? When does it become miraculous? What if you have a robust person who went for 40 years without getting sick? At which point does it turn into a miracle? Now, obviously you say that if a person comes and says, I've lived for 100 years, I was never sick, it's you'd call it interesting, maybe almost amazing. But is it something mind-boggling? Is the person completely in shock? It's certainly interesting. But this is what the Ramban calls Hanisim Hanistorim. Ramban says that the Jewish people are supposed to run on Nisim that Hashem works into nature. Meaning, we're not supposed to live a life that defies the laws of nature. That's not how this world works. Even when the Jewish people were on the highest level in Eretz Yisrael, I'm not talking about the Dor HaMidbar, that was an existence that defied nature. But in Eretz Yisrael, even when they were on the highest of levels, they never lived in a way that completely defied nature. A Jew can never go without eating. But he says, the way Hashem operated with the Jews were with hidden miracles worked into nature, meaning that they lived the optimal, most theoretically perfect natural existence. They did not get sick. No miracle, no open miracle involved there. It's a hidden miracle. But the Ramban says, it's these hidden miracles that Hashem's conduct with Klal Yisrael is all about. The optimal physical existence. Just a second, I just want to finish the thought. So he says, therefore, yes, the Ramban is saying that when the Jewish people were in their ideal state, sickness was a surprise. It was something that should not happen. And therefore, at that time, says the Ramban is right in saying that this is something that really shouldn't be. And when it does happen, we take it as direct and open punishment from Hashem. Today, things change. The Ramban says that if people, he says two things. First of all, this is the way it is when the entire Jewish nation is living up to the standards that Hashem sets. Then, we'll see them winning all their wars, never being sick, no poor people, etc., etc. The optimal existence within the confines of natural law. Right? When not, then the Jewish people are subject to the statistics of nature just like anybody else. Then they can get sick like anybody else. Then they begin relating to their occurrences as natural as opposed to heaven sent. And when they do, they have to seek natural remedies. Then they have to go to doctors. So it's true that in our times, a person has to go to a doctor because Klal Yisrael is not on that level. But essentially, the Ramban is correct. Essentially, the Ramban is correct. And therefore, Chizkiyahu felt that, rightfully felt, he had brought Klal Yisrael to a very, very, very great level. And he felt, in our time, people should not be consulting a book of remedies at all. In our time, any illness should be taken straight to Hashem. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, in previous times, like, where maybe we're at a higher level, if somebody had something which was obviously needed repair, like, say, they had a broken bone that was, like, not straight, or they had a huge cut or something like that from an injury, so...
How would it work then?
Hashem would have to provide an open miracle in order for them to get better on their own.
Okay. Rabbi Yaakov is asking, would the Ramban's principle apply also to a person who, okay, he got sick, he takes it as a punishment from Hashem, but now the guy's got a split head. Okay? So does he go to a Navi and stops speaking Lashon Hara for a week, and then boom, goes back together? That would seem to completely defy nature. So there are mefarshim who differentiate between ailments that are visible to the eye and ailments that are not. And they'd say that this applies to ailments that are inside the body, in which you don't know exactly what's going on. You see that the person's alive. A few weeks later, you didn't see anything unnatural occur. There are mefarshim that draw that distinction. Okay, this is our initial take on this Gemara. We'll see more Be'ezus Hashem on Thursday.